Hey my friend, welcome to the Tradie Success Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Allen, and I'm so excited that you're here. If you're new to the podcast, at the Tradie Success Academy, we help trade business owners create freedom from their businesses to live their best life. So I'm really excited to be sharing some of those lessons from members, other coaches in the academy, and my own experience growing my trade business. So make sure you hit subscribe and follow us on your current player, and you can head over to Spotify and ask a question where we get to understand what you want to hear more of. So make sure you do that, and until then, enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to this special episode at the Tradie Success Academy. Today we're joined with Sam Stapledon from Industry Air from Cairns, who's going to be diving into his industry, what a project looks like for him, what got him into business, what he has to say for young people joining the industry, and also a bunch more. So make sure you stick around and listen to this whole episode. Thanks so much for joining us, Sam.
Thanks, Greg. Good to be here.
Man, it's been an exciting time watching you grow and your company grow. So really excited to jump in today and learn about you and to share your stories. Love to kick it off with what got you into the industry.
So obviously it was when I was a little bit younger. I actually did finish doing another trade first and didn't enjoy it at all. And one of my friend's dads actually ran a refrigeration company. And I always found it quite interesting. You'd always see his cars driving around all the vans, and just walked in one day and said, "Hey, mate, can I have a job?" He goes, "Oh, you can have a trial." And did it for a couple of weeks, loved it, and still doing it.
Awesome. What really excited you about the trade?
Probably just like the technical difficulty of it. Having a constant problem solve, figure out problems, and actually, you know, apply yourself. There really isn't a day where you can just kick back, relax, and be brain dead. And it's always something different, always keeps you thinking.
Yeah, and after your job well done, you can turn on the aircon and cool yourself down.
Yep, absolutely.
Being in Cairns.
Yeah, it's running right now. It's raining outside, but my aircon's on.
How long have you been in the industry? What have you learned from the industry? Tell us a bit more about, you know, what you love about it.
So I started when I was 18. I'm now 30. So that's, I think it'll be 12 years in August this year. What I've learned, I've actually learned all different types of the trades over the last 10 years. I've done a bit from the commercial refrigeration space, the HVAC space, gone into big industrial refrigeration. I've learned that sometimes it can be very unrewarding work because a lot of the time you kind of, especially in the refrigeration side, you're in the background, people only call you when they need you. But then there's also the aircon space, which is a lot more rewarding because, you know, you go and you fix the aircon and the whole office is clapping you on the way out.
And so through your experience and your apprenticeship and being a tradesperson in the industry, what are some of those tough lessons you had to learn in the trade itself, not the business, but the trade?
There's always going to be something you don't know and that you can never stop learning. That's probably the biggest one. I think maybe towards the end of my apprenticeship, I thought I knew everything and I very clearly didn't.
What are the things that you had to learn? So for me, I remember how hard it was to learn how a two-way switch worked in electrical. And so one day it just clicks and you're, oh, that's how it works. And you understand the open and closed contacts. And then it sort of is an onflow effect to learning all of the other things. What was that for you in the air conditioning industry?
Biggest thing probably actually was, it comes down to electrical, was actually reading wiring diagrams correctly and understanding how PC boards work. That's another massive one. You literally start from one side of work to the other. You get there, you've got this massive wiring diagram. It's got 50 switches in it, a heap of pressure controls, safety switches, relays, a PC board in there too. And it looks so confusing. And, you know, but if you start from one side and you slowly read across and you actually, you know, you learn what each symbol means, once you kind of get that part down, start from one side, work through it efficiently, then yeah, they all just look the same.
Awesome, man. Well, can you walk us through like what it's your company, Industry Air, what is a typical project look like from start to finish?
I'll use a simple one. So let's just say just domestic air conditioning in someone's house. Maybe it's a couple, they've just bought a house that hasn't actually had air conditioning in it before, which sounds unbelievable up in Cairns, but it's a lot of the older houses don't. It's probably the start, the initial consultation, they'll call up. Well, I usually talk through the general costs and difficulties involved before I even go to site. Then once you get there, it's, you know, you meet the client, you have a good talk with them, you obviously try and relate to them on some level. Find the best solution for their property. Usually give them a rough price, go home, quote it up, check they're happy, check we're happy. Once that's all done, either myself or one of the tradesmen, normally the tradesmen now, they will go in, they'll complete the job. And that's probably for a smaller domestic job, that'll be the process.
diving deeper into the process of the actual completion of the job, just to paint a picture for like non-aircon companies that don't understand what you actually do, could you walk us through, like, you've got to purchase the air conditioning unit, you've got to come out, you've got to do the pipe work, you've got to get electrical there. Just help us understand what that looks like.
Absolutely, mate. So that's just use a split system for an example. So with the split systems, the boys will go to the shed and pick one up because we keep stock. They'll drive to site. They'll go to the room. The first thing is all the houses up here are block and concrete filled. So we get the indoor bracket up on the wall. Then we can mark out where our core hole penetration is going to go. We then get a very large core hole drill out attached with a vacuum cleaner to make sure we don't leave any dust. That usually takes about at least 10 minutes of drilling just to get through the block work. Once that block work's on, the indoor unit will get attached to the wall. The pipe work, the drain will be sticking out, and the electrical will be sticking out through the wall. Once that's done, we put some brackets up outside for the outside unit, sit the outside unit up. We get some capping, which is just a plastic flashing that will run across from the inside penetration to the outdoor unit. Inside that capping, there will be interconnect cable. That's what allows the outdoor and the indoor units to talk to each other. And there will be the refrigeration pipe work, which allows the refrigerant gas to go from inside to outside, and also the condensate drain to get all the humidity and the water that we've removed from the air to the outside. We'll then hook up all the refrigeration piping. At the same time, we usually have my partner company. We work alongside them almost every day. They're electricians. They'll come to site. They'll open up the switchboard. They'll add a new RCD into the board, run the cable up and through the roof to the location of the outdoor unit. They'll install an isolator, so just a nice big on-off switch, and then they'll wire up the unit for us. Once that's all done, we actually then get something called dry nitrogen. We pressure test the system to 3,000 kPa. That ensures that we've got no leaks in any of our pipe work. Once that's done, we then have to get another bit of tooling out. It's called a vacuum pump. That will actually pull the air out of the pipe work, and it will also create a vacuum. In a vacuum, water will actually boil at like negative 200 degrees because the pressure is so low. That's the point of the vac pump. We're sucking out all the air, so we're getting all the moisture out, because that moisture will actually turn the windings, the oil inside the compressor, acidic. Once that happens, it actually eats away the electrical windings, and you end up with burnt out compressors and issues down the track. So once that vacuum has been done correctly, we will then open the valves up, the unit will turn on, the sparkers will do all their testing, do all their forms, make sure it's all compliant. We'll turn it on, test it, and almost every time we have a very happy client relaxing with their new aircon.
How good is that? Great, man. Sweet. No, that's a great explanation. It helps visualize like the process for an aircon tech to come out and do that specific job. How does an air conditioner, like, let's stay on the topic of a split system, actually work? Like, what is it actually doing? We know it blows cool air out, but how is it actually working?
So the easiest way for me to describe this is, you guys have ever seen like a CO2 bottle or even a fire extinguisher? Before you open the valve, there is actually a liquid, which is the CO2 is a liquid in that bottle, because it's under immense pressure. Even though it shouldn't be a liquid at that temperature, the pressure makes it a liquid. Once you open that valve, it goes, because it's basically a really big bottle, and that really big bottle has a very tiny outlet. When it comes out, it goes instantly back into a vapor. That change from a liquid to a vapor is actually what makes it cold. So in the same way, that's how a refrigeration system works. So you have a compressor that will pump the gas up to a really, really, really high pressure. That then goes through what's called a condenser coil, which looks like a car's radiator. Air passes over it. That removes the heat from the refrigerant. It then travels through the smaller pipe, and it actually goes in warm to the inside unit normally. Once that happens, but essentially it's just a really small hole in the pipe work. It restricts the flow. That then becomes a vapor again. When that's a vapor on the inside, there's another radiator, which is called the evaporator. That evaporator then gets really, really cold. On a standard split system, it will actually be about 8 degrees. The fan for that indoor split system will then actually pass the air over that radiator. It actually won't cool the air. It will actually absorb the heat from the air. Once that heat's all absorbed, it then goes back out to the compressor, goes through the compressor, back into the condenser. That's where the heat gets removed. So it's a bit of a funny thing. You can't actually delete heat. It's impossible. You can only transfer it to the outside.
And that's why when it's in cooling mode, it blows hot air out of the compressor outside.
Yeah.
Or condenser outside. Yeah.
Awesome. That's a great explanation, and thanks for sharing. And so what's happening is the air's blowing, a fan is blowing air over the very cold coils. Is that correct?
Yep. Correct, yeah.
Inside. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. What did you say?
I was just to say, it's obviously a common misconception. People think they blow, they move air around from the outside to the inside. It's just a refrigerator going up and down.
Yeah. Where do you see the biggest mistakes happen in an install?
The most common mistake would have to be doing the mechanical connections. So the pipe work, you do a flare, kind of similar just to a plumber's flare, and that's what attaches the pipe work to the unit itself. The most common mistake I probably see is, and we obviously catch it by pressure testing both positively and in a vacuum, would be those flares not being done up properly, and then which obviously would lead to a gas leak, which even if you might not notice when you leave, you can wait, you know, a really small leak can take up to 6 months. Then all of a sudden these systems have got no gas and you've got an unhappy client call on your back.
Awesome. And what do you do in your team to make sure that, you know, you're ticking off that that's done properly so you're not getting callbacks?
So that's done through my job management software. It is actually a box they have to tick to say that they've done the pressure test and that they've done the vacuum test. And I normally get them to record the vacuum test. So we aim for something called 500 microns. We like to see a little bit below that. But I usually either get the boys to write in that tick box, and I've kind of just moved towards photos. So normally we'll get a photo of that. So if anything comes back, we can, you know, be say, well, no, it's definitely not this. So we may have touched it. Sometimes those flares can start leaking because they get hot and cold. They do expand and contract and the gas will leak out. We'll obviously still fix it for free. And we send those photos to the client as well with the invoice.
Yeah, it's just proof it was done correctly at the start.
And it's the reassurance of the client that they're getting the job done properly.
I love that. Oh, that was awesome, man. Thanks for walking us through there. If an electrician's listening right now, what do you wish they knew just to help them, you know, level up their knowledge around the air conditioning industry? Like, what are some of the things that you're like, I wish they just knew this because that would really help them do a better job?
Electrician might be hard for me because, like I said, I work so closely with another team of electricians that I couldn't even think of a mistake they've made in the last 6 months. My biggest pet peeve would probably be, maybe not pet peeve, but issue would be, say, on a new build, and the architects or the builders love to put air cons in positions where you can't have fall for the drain because water only falls downhill. That'll probably be the biggest lesson for other trade builders or architects. Give us somewhere to get a drain. Don't just, you know, expect us to put it there and
magically create descent. I'd love to move into like your business now. You know, 18 months ago you started, and I'd love for you to share your story, you know, getting into business. What got you into business in the first place? And what's your experience been so far?
To get into business, it actually, my original plan was to be in business a few years ago, not like, probably more like 4 years ago. But we actually, we lived in Sydney at the time. COVID was happening with a 3 month camping trip up the East Coast, ended up in Cairns. Car broke down here for 5 weeks and we'd never left. So I ended up going back to working for someone for a year just to see if I wanted to stay here. So then, yeah, I suppose the journey of running my own company began 18 months ago. Being in a new town, it was a bit scarier because I didn't have any contacts at all. You know, I knew, you know, maybe four other fridges, no builders, no one else to get work off. So I managed to find a company that offered me 2 days a week of subcontracting work, which I took on straight away. And then just went around finding as much work as I could for myself, just, you know, running around like a headless chicken, throwing out business cards to anyone that would look at me, talk to me, speak to me, real estates, builders, anything I could. And that kind of went on for the first 12 months. Just, I was always busy. Don't get me wrong. I was always doing 40, 50 hours a week on the tools and then coming home and doing all my admin, invoicing, quoting, everything else. And it was just about killing me. So that went on for about 12 months. And I actually saw Ben Doran, another aircon guy. I actually listened to his podcast on the TSA website, and that's what got me into TSA. And I suppose since then, I've learned quite a few things. But since then, really in the last 6 months, my team's gone from probably 1 to 4.5. And I'm now at the point where I am just growing because I now have time. I now have the capacity to chase leads, to do my quotes on time, to actually, you know, work properly rather than just like a headless chicken.
That's what we do. We help you create freedom, not in 10 years' time, not in 5 years' time, but now. You know, with the freedom we create, every hire is just freedom that you can work on other things in the business. And we want, and especially start prioritizing your family and personal time to maximize your performance yourself. And you've been a great example of like what you can achieve in such a short period of time.
Absolutely. Honestly, like the biggest thing, I reckon the most important thing I've learned is the whole business kills growth and just the power of hiring. I was so scared of hiring. I was scared of putting a tradesman on. What if I don't have the work? What if this happens? What if that happens? And just that reassurance, probably, you know, someone holding my hand, telling me it's going to be okay and the lessons learned. And yeah, as you put people on, you just grow your capacity.
Well, let's speak to that fear that you have, because I remember having that as well. And it was pretty much every hire, even as you grow, you know, it's like even hiring an admin, I wasn't sure about enough an admin. What hiring an ops, I wasn't sure if it was going to work. There's always this uncertainty, this voice in the back of your head. So what was going through your mind in terms of hiring?
Before I put my first tradesman on, the biggest fear was honestly was just not having enough work for him. Or, you know, what if I run out of work, then I'm now responsible for someone else, for, you know, for their pay, for their family, for them, you know, to have a life. That was just the biggest fear.
What happened to help you build the confidence? Is there a pivotal moment that you can remember?
Maybe not pivotal. I think it was just a combination of many, many different things. Even from, say, how to do business to business lead generation. And I suppose the other thing was actually doing a cost of operations properly. So I did that with Chantel, one of the coaches, went through a cost of operations. And when you put all the figures in, I actually realized that even if I didn't get any more work at all, it just stayed as much as it is right now, I could actually afford to pay this tradesman. Even if something stayed the exact same and I just stopped to put my feet up, we could actually both get paid.
I love that example. It's like it's the Stoic philosophy. I started using it a long time ago. It's like if you were to hire someone and put them in the cupboard and just leave them there, you know, could you pay for them? It's like the worst case scenario. It's like they start with you and then get injured and then they can't do any work. It's like if you could still afford that, then that's a no-brainer, right? So everything else is a bonus. I think it's a really good way to make you feel confident and, know that it's going to be okay no matter what and ready to take that risk, because it is a risk. But at the end of the day, when you've got the right systems, and that's why we design the curriculum the way it is to build that, you know, that base so that you're feeling confident to make that hire. And then that leads to what you're doing now, which is the confidence to rehire and continue to scale, which is exciting. So what's been, in or outside of the academy, what's been some of the biggest lessons you've learned in business?
Probably no matter what, the customer is still always right. Even if you think they're wrong, that's something that was quite hard for me. You know, when you think they're wrong, you still just have to suck it up a lot and find a good compromise where you're both unhappy.
Yeah, because the cost of them being upset is, you know, you don't actually see it, but it's the ripple effect that happens in the background. It's the negative review. It's them telling all their friends. It's the, you know, they were friends with one of your big clients' property manager's friends, who then tells the property manager, who now that doesn't want to send you any work anymore. You know, especially in a smaller community, you're going to get that sort of like backtracking effect happening. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Cairns is still very much a big country town. Everyone knows everyone. Now, actually, that's something else I've noticed now that I'm kind of growing and getting more and more clients. The more clients you get, the more contacts you make, and funnily enough, the more work you find. So as you kind of grow, it just seems to fall into place.
Cool, man. Is there any other lessons that you've learned, like any mistakes that you wish you knew or you'd go back and change?
Yeah, probably the hiring and onboarding. When I first went to get a tradie, I obviously looked at all the other adverts out there, and you know, they offer money, they offer uniforms. So I kind of just wrote, almost copy and pasted someone else's advert to try and get a tradesman. And that obviously didn't go anywhere. Spent quite a lot of money on Seek and a bit of even Facebook advertising. And then I really kind of nutted it down. I thought, what would make me want to start? And so instead of trying to offer someone a really good job, I went and tried to offer them a really good lifestyle. And that's kind of a really big lesson. Don't try and hire for a job, try and hire for a lifestyle.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I think there's so many people out there at the moment, they're like, oh, I know, you know, I'm trying to hire, I just can't find anyone. Well, it's like people in the academy are finding excellent talent every single day. And it's about the way that you show up. It's the way you present yourself, and it's the offer that you have, which isn't your typical offer. You know, you go through Seek and everyone's got the exact same ad, like you said. And if you just create an ad like it, you're just one of the others. So yeah, that's a great lesson. All right, Sam, thanks so much for sharing, man. So love to hear, like, what would you say to someone thinking about joining the academy from your experience?
So from my experience, I actually listened to your podcast for maybe 3 months before I actually took the plunge and joined. Obviously, there'll be a lot of fears, a lot of scares. You know, is it going to help me? Do I really need this? The biggest thing I can say is just give it a shot. You know, realistically, for the costs involved, it's a no-brainer. Once you get in, once you start doing it, you'll recoup your monthly fees every single month by the new work and even just the new relaxed lifestyle that you have. I don't think I've done over 50 hours a week for the last 6 months, and it's been awesome. I see my
man, that makes me happy.
See my friends.
Man, that is so good. And that's exactly what we do in the Academy, is about creating freedom for you to live a better life today rather than having to wait, you know, years to live that fulfilling life. And it all comes down to having more awareness around that and around your capacity and being able to create that. So I'm really stoked that you're already experiencing that, man. So what would be your long-term goal? You're obviously a part of the program as well as you identifying that long-term goal. What are you trying to achieve in terms of more freedom, and what does that look like?
It would probably just be essentially operational freedom. So we actually get married in October. That time of year is very busy for me, and I don't believe I'll be there by then. But this time next year, probably May, we're going to want to take a month-long honeymoon. So I really want to have the staff in place and the process in place so that me and my partner can basically just turn our phones off, go on holiday, just with the confidence to know that when I get back, I will still have a company. So that's my goal.
Awesome. Yeah, super achievable. And look at the growth you got now. You're not too far away from even putting that ops manager on and actually creating operational time freedom. So stoked for you, man. What would you say about someone getting into the air conditioning industry? Like, what do you love about it? Who is it for? Like, young people maybe thinking about getting into a trade. What do you say to them?
It's a phenomenal trade to have. You will be able to find a job anywhere in the world and anywhere in Australia doing this. It's something different every day. There's also so many different parts to the same trade. So I've done like marine refrigeration, so like fishing trawlers. I've done super yachts. I've done a bit of like the industrial stuff, abattoirs, a freezer room the size of a football stadium. I've also like commercial refrigeration. Back when I was an apprentice, we did beer plumbing and we used to install breweries. There's just so many different parts of being a fridgie, and you can never stop learning. And there's always something new and exciting to go and do in this trade. 100%, give it a go. Even just call up a random company, be like, hey, just can I have a 2-week trial? I wouldn't necessarily say I'll do it for free because I believe everyone should be paid, but hey, can I just have a 2-week trial? I really want to see what it's about. Call them up in the middle of summer. Everyone will give you a go. Just do it. Get into it.
Cool. Love it. Awesome. Thanks so much, man. And now I'd love to know, like, your life outside of. So you're not just a tradie, you do other things as well. So what do you love to get into outside of work when you're not swamped by the business and you're creating more time freedom?
I absolutely love traveling. Always used to travel. Used to do about 8 weeks away every year. With that, obviously, goes just like most blokes, I suppose. I love camping, love fishing. Probably why I ended up in Cairns, because I just love the lifestyle up here. Outside of that, pretty big animal lover. We've got 2 border collies. We also foster dogs. So at the moment, we've got a Kelpie. We're kind of training up and getting ready for a foster home too. Got some chickens in the backyard, little veggie garden that we're trying to grow. Hate being inside, hate being cooped up. I love doing things, and I just love being outside.
Love it, man. And so what does fostering dogs look like?
My partner saw a post on Facebook actually saying, hey, would anyone like to come and foster? It's through Cairns Animal Rescue. So they'll essentially be a dog that's been given up, or we had another one that came from a community out at Bamaga that was pretty much dead, stick and bones. So it's basically kind of just nurturing the dogs, depending where they come from, nurturing the dogs back to help. You can train an old dog. You can get rid of nervous traits in dogs. It is all possible. So we kind of train them up, and obviously not to the point of a perfect dog, but train them up enough that they're ready to go to their, say, forever home. So once that happens, we'll get some photos. We'll actually then obviously write a spiel about the dog. Once you've done that, they go on the website and, you know, we'll take them to an adoption day, or people call up and they'll come and have a look at the dog, see if it's a good fit. It's also, say, for this Kelpie we're training, he is obviously from like a working dog line. So we will have to make sure that the people have a lot of time for him. Because that's what happened to him. He got left outside for the first 12 months of his life, never got any attention. So every time he got the slightest bit of attention, or, you know, in his mind, oh, I've got something to do now, I've got some work to do, he just went nuts. So he is actually asleep on his bed in the lounge room right now. So we're getting there another couple of weeks and he'll hopefully be off.
Good on you, man. That's awesome. And what do you love to do with the family?
me and my partner, we do try and go out at least once a week. I know it probably costs a little bit of money, but it feel like, you know, we're both working on and in this business. So it gives us time just to switch off. Haven't done it too much recently because it's wet season up here. But in the next month, we should be able to get out camping again. So we'll try for at least one weekend out of three. We just jump in the car, dogs go in the tray, and we just kind of disappear off to somewhere. Just go find a nice waterfall or a creek and maybe drink one or two mini beers and just relax.
Do you have any strategies around not talking about work when you're both in the business?
Yes and no. We've almost got like a silent rule that once we get to dinner time, just the work talk stops. I think we've also got some really good processes in place, and we've got quite defined roles about what we do in the business. And that means there's a lot less, oh no, you need to do that. Why have we done this? You know, we've got our roles. We both do our jobs. And because we're both invested in this, you know, this company means that it's not just my company, it's our company. It means that when we have kids, I will have the operational time freedom. I'll be able to, you know, grow up with my kids rather than being that bloke that works 60 hours a week and he's the fun dad for an hour when he gets home and goes to sleep.
Yeah. Well, you both will. You'll both have operational time freedom.
That's exactly what I mean. It's, we can both enjoy our lives rather than, you know, be stressed and working.
I love it, man. I love watching your journey. I love seeing you grow, and I love helping you transition out of that operational stress that you're in and to create that freedom to be able to oversee the business, live a fulfilling life, and be there for when you have kids. It's going to be good.
Yep. I'm excited.
Oh, Sam, it's been awesome having you on the podcast, mate, and what an inspiration. Thanks for sharing your knowledge and your experience and the lessons you've learned. And if you've got anything to ask Sam, make sure you reach out to him in the Tradies app. And looking forward to catching up with you soon, Sam.
Thanks, bro, mate. Honestly, it's been a bit of an honor to be here. I think I made a joke with my partner when I first joined that I'd love to be one of the guys that gets to go on the podcast through working hard. And, you know, onwards and upwards. Let's see what I can do in the next 6 months. And, yeah, just exciting. Exciting for the future.
Crush it, bro. See you soon.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed the episode. For me, it took me a long time to grow my trade business because I made so many mistakes. It was stressful, it was lonely, and I didn't know what I needed to do to grow the business. And now that I've got operational time freedom myself, you know, I've moved to Byron Bay, my company runs by itself in Perth, it gave me the inspiration to want to help people like you not go through the challenges that I face. And now we're helping people get there in just a matter of years from startup. So I'm so excited to introduce the Freedom Fighters program at the Tradie Success Academy, where you can get to operational time freedom and live your best life. Head to the show notes, click the link, and check out the Freedom Fighters program today.